The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America, and welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. I don't think there is anything in the world, literally, that is more important than the case in Great Britain. I know our president needs to be prayed for, needs divine protection. Over in Europe, he's meeting in Poland. He is meeting with Putin, the G20. In Germany, they have said that the soldiers that are protecting the G20 need to take their uniforms off for their own safety. They're expecting major riots. We have North Korea on the edge. My wife was leaving this morning for the airport, and I told her, honey, I don't think this is going to happen, but you're gone for a week and a half. If war breaks out and I call you and say, get on an airplane, please get on an airplane and come home. The world is a mess. We are in a place where we could lose the Western way of life. But I am more concerned about us losing our own humanity. And it all comes down to a little child in intensive care in a hospital that is run literally by Peter Pan. The story of Charlie Gard, vital to our humanity. We begin there right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Charlie Gard, a story that the English are very aware of. And it is a really important case for the entire West. It's a story that up until Matt Walsh reported this on The Blaze, it was not being reported here in America. Matt's going to be on with us next hour. He broke this story, really, or broke it into the consciousness of America with a story that he wrote about this infant, this baby that is fighting for its life. Charlie Gard. He's on life support in a London hospital. He has a rare genetic disorder. There's only 16 people in the world that have had this. It prevents his cells from producing enough energy to sustain his organs. At this moment, he can't move or breathe on his own. The parents have raised $1.6 or $7 million. To move Charlie to an American hospital. Why would you move him to an American hospital? Well, because socialized medicine is not as good as the medicine here in the United States. There is a doctor here at Columbia that has dealt with this very genetic disorder before, and there is a child that is living with this now, 5 years after treatment, and is doing better. Off the ventilator, beginning to move his hands and his feet, and the parents say he's a happy child. But does he have a life worth living? What kind of life is that? The hospital took the parents to court. They said they need to let the baby die. They won a series of court rulings. The final one last week in their Supreme Court. It was a EU decision. It allowed them to turn off the ventilator and the feeding machines that are keeping Charlie alive. They asked for just a few more days. They say there's this experimental therapy in the United States. They have the money. The Pope has offered help. Donald Trump has offered help. And yet, Theresa May is saying the child has to die. We're going to tell you this story today because this is not about an isolated child. Slate Magazine already, immediately, puts out a story. The right is going to make this into a horror story for socialized medicine and death panels. Yes, we're not going to make it into a story. We're going to tell you the truth. This is what death panels look like. There is a group of people at the hospital who say this child has no livable life of quality, and they don't want the child to live anymore. Why? Why? Why not give the child back to the parents? Why not let the child go overseas for experimental surgery or experimental treatment? Why not? Well, it's causing the child so much pain. They're living in pain. May I ask you a question? Do you know anybody who has cancer? Do you know anybody who has stage 4 cancer and has been given the death sentence by the doctor? Some of those people say, okay, you know what? I just want to live my life. I don't want to go on more chemotherapy. I don't want anything. I'm going to use the last 5 months, 2 months, a year of my life to live it as fully as I can. Other people that I know are in so much pain they can barely move, and they're begging for experimental surgery, begging for experimental therapy, begging for experimental drugs, and their case is the same. It might work, even if it doesn't. It will further the medical understanding of cancer and perhaps cure people later. Since when do we accept a death penalty? Now, that's different than somebody is 100 years old and they've lived a great life and we're doing everything we can and they have no money just to keep them alive. Nature is calling them home. But you could make the case, yes, but if there's experimental life-prolonging medicine out there that is the fountain of youth, if that person at 99 or 100 years old says, you know what, I want to live longer, and I have the money, and I want that experimental treatment, I don't have a problem with it, do you? Why should I care? It's their choice. Well, this is a baby. The baby doesn't have a choice. And especially in the world of socialized medicine, nobody paid attention to what was happening in the British courts. In the British courts in 2002 is where this started. It was a landmark case. There were two Siamese twins. And the Siamese twins, the weaker of the twin girls, was Mary. Her heart and lungs were not fully developed, and she was robbing the strength of the older one, Jody. Had they remained conjoined, the judges believed that the best advice from the doctors is that they would both die. The parents said no. We don't want them split apart. Her lungs, we believe, through faith and through medicine and through time, we believe her lungs will develop and she will be stronger for the surgery later. The courts said no. Cut them apart. They did. As a result, Mary died. Jody lived. Mom doesn't know best. Father doesn't know best. England insists that the state knows best. They know what's best for other people's children, and they have the power to act on it, even against the parents' wishes. So why is this happening? Well, this happens over in socialized medicine countries quite a bit. Doesn't happen so much here because we have the power. We still think we have the power. That power is slipping through our fingers right now. The accounts of two-thirds of the National Institute of Health over in the National Health Services, their socialized medicine, two-thirds of the providers are in the red in 2015, with a combined deficit of 2.5 billion euros last year alone. The prime minister is saying, we're going to give you an extra 10 billion for the NHS by 2020. So they're into rationing. When you're into rationing, we taught all of this when I was at Fox at the chalkboard. When you ration, you need death panels to decide who's going to get the medicine, who's not. It's not some evil dressed in black like the Gestapo death panel. It's a group of people that care about people. And they have to weigh the good of the many against the good of the one. Well, that's not how I view my child. But once socialism runs out of other people's money, then trouble starts. Because the NHS is paying for Charlie's, he doesn't have insurance, he has government insurance. And because they are paying for the round-the-clock care, the medical staff believes that his condition is worsening. The NHS is the bank, the hospital, the parent, and the court of God. So they believe, governments believe, America didn't. But we are headed down this road that the government manages health, wealth, education, and everything inside of our home. That they are the arbiter. They know best. There was a court case here in the United States Supreme Court, Prince versus Massachusetts, 1944. The Supreme Court held that the government has, quote, broad authority to regulate the actions and the treatment of children, and that parental authority is not absolute and can be restricted if doing so is in the interest of a child's welfare. This will come here. You and I have spent a long time worrying about our country. And I have told you that we first had to restore honor, which meant restore the truth. Know what you believed, and then be a person of honor and integrity. Then we restored courage, because there was going to come a time when you were going to need to stand to defend that truth, and it would be really unpopular. And that we were headed towards a world where the most vulnerable, be it children, the Jew, or people without any kind of political clout or power, were going to come under attack. And we needed to stand even when it wasn't in our own best interest, even when it hurt, even when it was people we didn't want to defend. We had to stand for their constitutional rights. And the last one was restore love. Make sure that your heart doesn't soften. And to do that, we all went to Birmingham and we started to fight for the most vulnerable, the Christians and their children who were enslaved by ISIS. This audience has saved 20,000 people. We have moved 7,000 people. We have moved out of the Middle East. When the rest of the world said they can't figure it out, we did. They can't figure out who the good guys and the bad guys are. We have. We can't get involved. We did. We can't save those children from their prison rape rooms where the mothers are being forced to watch their daughters being raped 5 and 6 times a day, and the daughters are forced to watch their mothers being raped. The world sat on their hands and did nothing. Well, that's too complex. It's too difficult. It's too dangerous. This audience knew every single life is worth saving. You don't know Charlie. You don't know his parents. But the more that I read this story and the more I hear about their plight and his plight, we are all the parents of Charlie Gard. We'll tell you how you can help in just a minute. First, let me tell you another story. I want to tell you about William. William lives here in Texas, and he inherited a home in California. And being a good Texan, he didn't want to go to California. I got to get rid of that thing in California before it kills me. Imagine the stress of trying to sell a house, not just out of state, but in California. It's crazy. Not for William, because he went to realestateagentsitrust.com. His agent, Brad, had a bidding war going on in California within a week. William ended up getting $30,000 more than what he was asking for the home in California. And the whole process was completed start to finish from the time he went online to realestateagentsitrust.com to getting the check. It was completed within 30 days. realestateagentsitrust.com. They're going to help you find a great real estate agent in your town or the town where you need to buy a house or sell a house. realestateagentsitrust.com. Thousands of families just like you have already put them to test, and the results are amazing. You want to sell your home on time, fast, for the most money. realestateagentsitrust.com. realestateagentsitrust.com.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello. Hello, America. I'm just looking through some history. Matt Walsh, by the way, is going to be joining us here in just a couple of minutes. He'll be able to give you the whole story on Charlie Gard. Charlie's parents are saying now, and I don't know if this is true, and I hope it's not, but Charlie Gard's parents are saying that Twitter is editing their Twitter feed and their account. I can't believe that's true, but they're trying to get the word out all around the world, and they're asking for your help. So please spread this news. He's only got about a week before they take him off.
Yeah, it's only the Supreme Court. They're waiting on the Supreme Court decision in Great Britain. So,
and it's going to come back.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to come back negative.
Two courts have already ruled against him.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is they have said they are in touch with Trump and the White House. And he's been great with this.
Right. And, you know, let me tell you something. If Trump really, if I could give advice to Donald Trump, this is something that he should own.
Yeah,
this is something that he, and don't make it about politics. Don't make it about politics. Make it about this child. Do you know that Russia has stopped all adoptions into Sweden and the Netherlands? Do you know this?
No.
This is how. Why? This is how. This is. Remember, I said that Putin would start to be the guy who held the banner up for the West and said, you guys have gone insane and reclaim your values with me. They are killing kids, and we'll tell you about it, how it's happening, euthanizing children. And so they don't want to do business with the Netherlands because they say life is sacred and they are going to exterminate children.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Matt Walsh, one of the clearest thinkers available today. And that's saying something, because there are not a lot of clear thinkers out there. They're hard to find. Matt Walsh, you'll find at theblaze.com. He's got a book out, The Unholy Trinity, Blocking the Left's Assault on Life, Marriage, and Gender. Make sure you pick it up if you're a fan of Matt Walsh. Make sure you grab the book, and also you can find him at theblaze.com. Matt, welcome to the program.
Hey, Glenn, thanks for having me.
So you were the one who really has brought this story to the attention of America, the Charlie Gard story, this story of this 11-month-old child who has been fighting for his life against the socialized medicine situation in England for months. I can tell you why they're not covering it here in America. How are they covering it over in England?
Yeah, well, over there, it's been, as you said, for months, it's been, the story's been all over the place, and the parents have been on all of their, you know, kind of primetime shows, and it's been, I guess, sort of like what the Schiavo case was here, in terms of just the intensity of coverage.
Are they as divided as we were with Schiavo?
Yeah, I think from my reading of the situation, they're just as divided, and it's, you know, kind of cuts down the same lines. And you have, although I think in Europe you may have fewer who are sort of on the pro-life side than you do here, although we don't have that many here anymore either. But
well, I don't know if you remember this, Matt, but Pat, play the audio clip. This is from a few years ago on like their breakfast show on the BBC. This is a guest and they're talking about socialized medicine and what to do with undesirable children. Listen to this.
This may strike your listeners as way out.
No, this is not it. That was
true. No, and I think that if I were a mother of a suffering child, I would be the first to want. I mean, a deeply suffering child, I would be the first to want to put a pillow over its face.
Dr. Peter Evans
as
is
I
from
would with a, you know, any suffering thing. And I think the difference is that my feeling of horror, suffering is much greater than my feeling of getting rid of a couple of cells, because suffering can go on for years.
I'm sorry, I was just about to introduce another guest there, but that was that's a pretty horrifying thing.
What?
To say that you would put the pillow over the.
Of course I would. If it was a child I really loved who is in agony, I think any good mother would.
Wow. Matt, where is this coming from?
Yeah, that is. And now that you played that, I do remember that. And that is just the idea that you're going to kill your own child out of love. This idea of killing out of love is—it's not any different than you hear these horrifying cases of mentally disturbed mothers. What about Andrea Yates, who drowned her five kids in a bathtub and did it because she loved them? So how's that any different? It's no different. So once you start going down this train, that's where it heads. But this, where it comes from is, you know, we know in all across the West, there is it's just a fundamental inability that some people have to recognize that life is sacred, to recognize that life has inherent value. And so they start seeing, they see someone, they say, oh, they're suffering or they're disabled or they're poor or they've got these other external factors that make their life less desirable. Well, we might as well get rid of them because there's no reason to keep them around. So there's this kind of like utilitarian, materialistic view of life. That as long as it's useful, as long as it's pleasurable, as long as it's convenient to those around it and to itself, then we keep it around. But once that ends, then we get rid of it. And it's just it's a horrifying, that's what I tried to explain when I wrote about it. This is once you've put yourself on that side of the argument, and this is not hyperbole, you have put yourself on the same side as all of the worst people in the history of the earth, and all of the worst atrocities that have ever been committed have always been committed with that kind of thinking. So that's where you place yourself on that side, and good luck to you in that case.
So, Matt, do you find any cause of concern? Have you read what the Pope actually said, not just the release, but or the newspaper account from it, but what he actually the entire thing?
Yeah, well, this is the story with the Vatican. At first, the Vatican comes out with a statement that all but explicitly endorses the courts and the hospital and takes their side in it, which was horrifying. I mean, I couldn't, as cynical as I am, especially about this Pope sometimes, I couldn't believe that. I couldn't believe that they actually did that. You know, because we need the Vatican and the Catholic Church to be pro-life, it's been one of the only pro-life institution left standing. And the idea that that would go away, to me, especially as a Catholic, I just couldn't stomach. But then the Pope comes out, he sends out kind of a vague tweet, and then he comes out and he says that we need to support the child, and the Vatican offers to, you know, take the child into the Vatican hospital, which, of course, the other possible declines that. But it's the same story where there's this kind of conflicted messages, and obviously Pope Francis doesn't have control of what's going on over there. But I still, to me, it's still not enough. I need the Pope to come out in stronger language. And actually, and I know he doesn't like doing this kind of thing, but he needs to.
But there's no, there's
condemn.
He condemns capitalism. He condemns a lot of things, but he did not condemn the snuffing out of this child's life. And here's what he said: the complexity of the situation and the heart-rending pain of the parents and the efforts of so many to determine what is best for Charlie. We have to acknowledge, we do sometimes have to recognize the limitations of what can be done in modern medicine. Well, where's the talk about, you know, the sanctity of all life? Where is the talk about miracles? Where is the, I mean, I don't understand this. We would stop all cancer treatment, except for the most benign of cancers. We wouldn't be doing experiments with people who are in stage four cancer. We would just say, you know what, let's accept the limits of modern medicine. If we stop trying to save lives, medicine stops moving forward, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, it defeats the entire purpose of medicine. But that's the problem. Once you've introduced, as we have in the West, once you've introduced abortion and then you introduce euthanasia, and keep in mind that in Europe, in some countries in Europe, that you can get euthanasia, even if you're not terminally ill, you can get euthanasia. They give euthanasia to alcoholics, depressives, to children. So they're just getting rid of everybody on both ends of the spectrum over there. And they've completely perverted the whole concept of medicine, which is to always, you know, do no harm, the Hippocratic Oath, to always treat and heal and do what you can. And that's the thing that it's so horrifying that the Vatican missed this aspect. Not just, you know, it's bad enough that they didn't say enough on the sanctity of life issue of it. But this is the fundamental issue here, is that the parents have their own money and they just want to take that was donated to them. They just want to take the kid, bring him to America and just try something rather than just letting him die. I mean, of course, any parent would want to do that if they had the means to do it. So this is just, it's just,
Slate is,
I'm speechless.
Slate is, has written an article: the right is turning the Charlie Gard tragedy into a case against single payer healthcare. It's just the opposite. That's their headline. And, first of all, is this not a case against single payer healthcare? Even though these parents have the money, once you're trapped into that system must be absolute. You can't let people make their own decisions, so it must be absolute. Is that not the only reason why they're not allowing this child to leave the hospital? Because the state must have control and be able to say, I have the control of God over life and death and what you do once you check into our system. It's Hotel California.
Yeah, this is all about, of course, this is, well, that's slight for you, always missing the point, but that's, of course, this is all about, it's about single-payer healthcare and it's about sanctity of life. Those are the two issues that this is about, and about parental rights, too, so those are the three. And it's all linked, of course, but and the issue is, who should have the final say on these kinds of medical decisions? Should it be the patient and or the patient's caregiver, the parent? Or should it be the state? That's the question. When it comes down to it, who decides what kind of treatment is given and which lives are worth saving? And in a single-payer healthcare system, of course, we've given control over to the government. So the government's going to make those decisions because it's all about efficiency. And it's all about, well, let's not waste our time or reap precious resources on this life that's going to die anyway, which is a really troubling way of looking at it because, hey, we're all going to die anyway. And like you pointed out, Glenn, cancer. I mean, there are many kinds of cancer that can be treated, but it probably will shorten your lifespan even if you get past the first bout of it. I mean, there are many diseases like that. So once you start traveling down this road, it goes to some really dark places. And it's astounding to me that so many people fail to see that because it's so obvious to me.
Matt Walsh, the author of the article that I believe was the first article really to bring this to light in America, the story of Charlie Gard, Slate writes, and just think about what you just said, Matt. Slate writes, the right will raise the specter of death panels, which you just said, who makes the decision of who lives or dies, which is exactly what's happening. These outlets have turned one hard case into a sweeping referendum on the inherent justice and effectiveness of socialized medicine. It's as if the death of one child matters, but the death of thousands is the cost of reform. Or as if intervening in one complex and tragic case is heroic, but building a system that would prevent the suffering of many is more intolerable overreach. How do you respond?
Well, that is, first of all, I don't want to get too sidetracked, but this is not a hard case. This is not a hard case. This is a very basic, no-brainer case that the parents should be able to go and get treatment for the child, period. There's no other way of looking at it. There's no other way that a sane person can look at it. But second, that's the whole point. This is what we're trying to avoid, this idea of weighing the one against the many. It's not supposed to be that way. We don't look at Charlie Gard and say, well, let's weigh him against 1,000 people. He is one individual. Every life is of infinite value. And that's how those lives should be. All of them should be treated when they're in the hospital. Certainly parents should have the right to treat their own children's lives that way. And so we don't want to get into a situation where the government is coming in and sort of they have their formulas and their statistics and they kind of have everybody on a spreadsheet and they decide, well, let's emphasize this life over that one. We don't want to do that at all. That's the whole point. We're trying to avoid that. And so that's why you allow individuals to make these decisions, and you allow the free market to reign, so that we don't have these kinds of weighing this against that, because it shouldn't be. There's no reason for it to be that way. There's no reason why we should have to weigh Charlie Gard's life against anything else, because the parents have the money and they just want to get him treatment, and so they should be able to do it. That's it. We don't need to look at anything else or any other situations. They should be able to do what they want to do and have the resources and capability to do.
Matt, thank you very much. You can follow Matt at The Blaze. Also follow him at Matt Walsh blog and look for his podcast at soundcloud.com. Matt Walsh. Back in just a second. Our sponsor this half hour is Casper Sleep. Are you tired of sleepless nights? You know, your mattress could be one of the big reasons why you're having a problem getting to sleep. Comfortable sleep is vital. And now you can have one at an affordable price. Casper is going to ship right to your front door free in a small box, and they'll pick it up after 100 nights. If you don't love it, you can call them and say, I don't like this, I want my money back. They will refund every single penny, and they will come and pick it up for you. It's breakthrough design. It has superior quality. It has cut out the middleman. I mean, it's an uncomfortable thing to walk into a mattress store and see Glenn Beck trying out mattresses. It really is something you don't want to experiment. Now you don't have to, because you can try it out in your own home for 100 nights. No wonder Casper was named Fast Company's 50 Most Innovative Brands of 2017. Sleeping on a mattress is the best way to try it out. Do it now. Just go to Casper.com. Use the promo code Beck and get $50 off the purchase of your mattress. It's Casper.com, promo code Beck. Casper.com. Terms and conditions do apply.
Today at 5 p.m. Eastern on The Blaze TV.
Glenn is taking your calls live for a full hour. Call 888-727-BECK and ask Glenn anything.
Today at 5 p.m. Eastern on the Blaze TV.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Charlie's Fight is the Twitter page. Charlie's Fight for Twitter. They had to put a new page together. It was Fight for Charlie. And this is according to the family. Twitter is censoring our page. And so Fight for Charlie account had 6,000 followers. They had to start a new campaign and change for some reason because of Twitter. This is what they say. I don't know. They've accused Twitter of being disgraceful and anti-life. You can now follow them at Charlie's Fight. And they're asking, this is the family, Twitter is censoring this page. Please head over to Charlie's Fight new page and get tweeting like crazy. We need to spread the word. We need your help. Hashtag Charlie Gard, and it's G-A-R-D, no U, Charlie Gard. This is something that will determine who we become. I started the hour by saying we have worried about our country for a long time. I am more worried about losing our humanity than I am about losing our country. We are on the verge of losing our humanity, and that will guarantee that we lose the Western way of life. I want to show you what some of the leaders are doing, what some people are doing, some really inspirational things that people are doing all around the world to help and help children like this. And I'm going to take you down history when we come back.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. There is a story of Charlie Gard that you need to know about, and we only have days to spread the word. Charlie Gard is an 11-month-old baby in the United Kingdom that is being told by the courts that they have to starve him to death and remove the ventilator. The parents say, okay, but we've raised $1.7 million. There is a doctor here in America that will treat our child, that gives our child a chance to live. There are only 16 children that have ever had this disease. Two of them are doing fine. Two of them are living today. One is in America, and I think 5 years old now. The other one is over 10, living in Italy in Boy Scouts and everything else. What does a family do when the government, because they're socialized medicine and they deem that they now have control over your life, won't let you take your child out of the hospital, instead is giving your child a death sentence? Where is this leading? Well, you want to see the future? First, glance at the past. We go there right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Russia has banned any adoption going out to Belgium. So if you're from Belgium, you are not allowed to adopt any Russian children, and Russia says that they will not do any business with adoption in Belgium because they may be euthanized. Now, listen to this. This is from Russia. Quote, It is high time that we not only make friends, but also appreciate the condition of the society we plan to contact with. Therefore, we say that the society which officially favors murdering children is unhealthy. Russia has decided to protect its citizens from euthanasia. People will often adopt children with disabilities. Russia has made a good decision to protect Russian children from being adopted by citizens of countries that allowed euthanasia of children. What are they talking about? What countries are allowing euthanasia of children? Well, we now have the case of Charlie Gard, the 11-month-old who is not being allowed, even though the parents have the money. They have doctors and hospitals willing to treat here in the United States. The English government, the death panels, make no mistake, these are death panels. Yes, they're judges, but they are looking and saying what is in the best interest of the child. He's in pain. Let him die. And the parents can do nothing about it. Is that the kind of medicine that we in the West feel is right and righteous and good? No. It's not like the parents don't have other options. They do. And they have resources to be able to pay for them. Why would you stop this? Because there is something else going on. And it is socialized medicine. Russia making that stance is Putin following Dugin's plan. Dugin is one of the main advisors, and he said, basically, become the vicar of Christ. Become the true vicar of Christ. Stand up for these principles, and don't be ashamed of it. Now, here's a guy who throws people off of tops of buildings and shoots them in elevators, and he's standing up for life and traditional values? Yes. Because he's trying to pull people over to his side by being the only person that makes sense, even though he doesn't believe it.
Yeah, and when he said, we do not want to battle against Christianity. On the contrary, we have to declare ourselves to be the only true Christians. Christianity is the slogan under which we will eradicate the preachers.
Jeez.
Of course, I don't think that's Putin. I think that's Hitler, isn't it?
Adolf Hitler. That was his quote on
right.
what he was doing.
It's the same thing.
And yet everybody says that he was doing things in the name of Christianity.
No.
He's a Christian.
No. The first thing he wanted to do was endear
himself to them at the very beginning.
Within 6 months, he said we had to eradicate the Old Testament from the Bible because it had Jews in it.
Yeah, Institute for the Study and Eradication of Jewish Influence on German Church Life, which aimed to say that Jesus was not Jewish. And the Old Testament was garbage because it was written by Jews.
Okay.
He was Episcopalian, wasn't he?
Let's take this into modern day. Can we look at what is happening in Belgium? Why did Russia say this? Belgium had its first case of child euthanasia in 2016. But the Netherlands have allowed minors to request and receive euthanasia. Dutch children down to the age of 16 can receive euthanasia without parents' consent. Children can be killed by doctors with parental consent starting at the age of 12. Belgium has no age limit. And instead of requiring that a minor demonstrate a capacity to make decisions before receiving a suicide, they don't have to. So a child cannot enter into legal contracts. They can't even get a tattoo in Belgium. But at any age, they can request doctor-assisted suicide. This is where we're headed.
Because of sanctity of life. They not just request, but
they receive it.
Yeah.
Now, there are three things that they have to meet these requirements. The baby or the child has to have no chance of survival. Well,
yeah, it's one of these. You don't have to meet all three of these, just one.
My daughter right now I'm waiting for her to come in to the office. She's bringing something in from my home library that I need. Talked to her about an hour ago on the phone. And she said, okay, Dad, I know right where it is. I'll bring it in. By the way, I was told that she would never walk, talk, or feed herself. But, you know, don't worry about it. They were completely wrong. So,
and they often are.
Yes. Baby has no chance of survival. Two, the baby may survive after a period of intensive treatment, but expectations for their future are very grim. So, in other words, they don't have any real quality of life. Three, the baby does not depend on technology for physiologic stability, but has suffering that is severe, sustained, and cannot be alleviated. So, in other words, they don't need anything, but they're in pain. You meet those three, or one of those.
One of those three.
Yeah. And that third one
and
is...
You can have the euthanasia.
Yeah, and you performed. Can. They will inject poison into the child.
But to be middle-aged in Asia, I think they don't allow that for some reason.
No, it's not youth. No.
And the elderly in Asia, why is there...
All they care about is the euthanasia.
So here's the thing.
No.
You can now... this is Peter Singer stuff. Peter Singer is the chair of ethics at Princeton University and a despicable human being, but I'm glad that he is teaching. I'm just glad that he's balanced by somebody like Robbie George at Princeton University, who is a total defender of life. But Peter Singer is the guy who says you can kill a child really up until they realize that there's a tomorrow. As soon as they realize there's a tomorrow, that's what makes them human.
Yeah, he didn't really even want to put an age on it because that could happen.
Right. And as soon as you don't know there's a tomorrow, you stop being human. So you get, you have Alzheimer's and you don't realize that tomorrow is coming. We can kill you because you're not a person. You're not a person.
And a lot of people have bleak prognoses that turn out to be wrong. We have a friend who's had stage 4 cancer.
16?
They told him when it finally got to that stage, they said, you've got days or weeks, maybe months. But they said nobody's lived past 5 years.
Yeah.
He's gone through 20 years now.
20?
Still alive.
He just had like his 76th round of chemo.
Yeah.
He's still alive. It's crazy. They don't know. And this guy has accomplished in those 20 years more than I've probably accomplished in my entire life. Now, the reason why we're bringing this up is because this is what happens with socialized medicine. You must devalue life because there's not enough money. Slate Magazine is making this thing with Charlie Gard into, so he's got $1.6 or $7 million that the family raised for his health care. That health care needs to go to somebody else. That money should be used for the masses, not for him. Mm. It's not about the individual. This is the danger of a we society. A me society. Generally, because everybody's me, 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 they don't group together and say, we are going to kill these people because they're in our way. Usually me's are stopped. But when you're in a we society, which we are now, and the whole Western world is in, when you're in a we society, the West goes nuts.
It's funny. I think people are getting caught up with the Charlie Gard thing on his chance of survival with this treatment. And that even the doctor who would give the treatment believes it might only help, might only be a short term, might help Charlie smile and hold on to things for a short time even. It might not be the solution. But take it out of that. Remove the idea that Charlie could possibly be cured here. Why on earth wouldn't the family be able to take the child home into a hospice situation and die at home? I mean, that is something that happens all over the place, right? Why would he not be able to be removed from the hospital under that care and have his pain alleviated and die with dignity at home? I mean, liberals love the fancy pet funerals where you get to have your dog at home instead of at the cold hospital. You can't.
Well, I did that. Right. It's not just liberals.
But liberals love it. You're being consistent. They're not. That's my point. Yeah. And it's a situation where even if there was a 0% chance of survival, zero, dead zero, why wouldn't they allow this child to be removed from the hospital anyway? And the answer is, under this system, implicit in this system is that you have allowed the state to make that decision. It is not your child. It is theirs.
So now listen to this. It is really extraordinary that people refuse to apply to human beings such elementary knowledge as every successful farmer is obliged to supply to his own stock breeding. Any group of farmers who permitted their best stock not to breed and let all the increase come from the worst stock would be treated as fit inmates for an asylum. Yet we fail to understand that such conduct is rational compared to the conduct of a nation that permits unlimited breeding from the worst stocks, physically and morally. While it encourages or connives at the cold selfishness or the twisted sentimentality as a result of which men and women ought to marry, and if married, have large families, remain celibate, or have no children, or only one or two. Someday, we will realize that the prime duty and inescapable duty of the good citizen of the right type is to leave his blood behind in the world so that we have no business to perpetuate the citizens of the wrong type. Who wrote that? Take a guess. Do you know, Stu?
I think I heard you talking about it earlier.
Theodore Roosevelt. Yeah. This is the progressive mindset.
That's a guy who a lot of Republicans say was their favorite president.
And he was the first to suggest socialized medicine. Mm. Listen to this. You will be interested to know that your work has played a powerful part in shaping the opinions of a group of intellectuals who are behind Hitler in this epic-making program. Everywhere, I sense that their opinions have been tremendously stimulated by American thought, and particularly by the work of the Human Betterment Foundation. I want you, my dear friend, to carry with you this thought for the rest of your life, that you have really jolted into action a great government of 60 million people. This is from the Human Betterment Foundation, a nonprofit corporation in Pasadena, California. Its date is 1935.
Yeah, the real document right there.
Yes, this is the real document. They worked with the doctors of eugenics in Sweden, in Germany, in New York, in Ohio. I told you this yesterday, that it's this utopian view that life isn't worth living unless you have the perfect life. And some lives, there's just too much suffering. But once you start going down that road, where do you stop? Yesterday on the air, I told you the story about baby Naur. Baby Naur was the first baby, patient zero of the Holocaust. The baby's father had written to Hitler in 1939 asking for permission to kill his blind and deformed son. The doctor said the father of a deformed child wrote to the Führer with a request to be allowed to take the life of this child or this creature. Hitler ordered me to take care of this case. The child had been born blind, seemed to be idiotic, and a leg and parts of an arm were missing. So what happened? We know they killed baby Naur, but how did they kill them? And what has just been confirmed now through research that happened after baby Naur? A child that had no chance at a future, was in pain, wouldn't have a life that was worth living. What happened? We'll share that next with the actual documents when we come back. Our sponsor this half hour, we are pleased to have Simply Safe. Getting a good night's sleep is easier said than done, especially if you think you heard a noise downstairs. Me, personally, I go right back to sleep. My wife is up for an hour. I'm telling you, Glenn, wake up. There's nothing. I heard a noise. What do you do in that situation? Turn on all the lights, keep watch, check your beds for the kids every hour, sleep with one eye open. Or you can rest easy because you know you have a security system that has eyes on. SimpliSafe. When you install SimpliSafe in your home security, you're arming your home with the most powerful sensors that will actually tell you if a door opens or a window breaks. There's a 105 decibel siren that alerts you and wakes everybody up in the first sign of trouble. You also have a dedicated team of security professionals watching over you 24/7, ready to send the police for $14.99 a month. Now, you own this system. You can install it yourself. I mean, I don't mean you can install it. I mean, you really can. I've installed it. You can install it yourself. There's no wiring or anything. It's completely wireless. You take it out of the box. You plug the base station in, and it says, set up the window. And it tells you exactly how to do it. It's super easy. 30 minutes if you have a big house, maybe an hour, and you're sleeping fine. SimpliSafe. SimpliSafe is having its biggest ever summer sale right now. Get $100 off the exclusive summer package, a limited time only. Go right now to SimpliSafeBeck.com. That's SimpliSafeBeck.com.
Today at 5 p.m. Eastern on the Blaze TV.
Glenn is taking your calls live for a full hour. Call 888-727-BECK and ask Glenn anything.
Today at 5 p.m. Eastern on the Blaze TV.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
So, five-month-old boy, baby Nauer, was the first Nazi euthanasia victim. Adolf Hitler was convinced, out of compassion, to put this poor little boy that was blind, missing a part of an arm and a leg, to sleep because he had no quality of life. This, up until 2003, baby Nauer was not known. They did not know who this baby was. It was just referred to as Case K. And all of the doctors involved, everybody changed their name. And after years and years and years of researching, they finally know exactly what happened to Case K, what we now know as Baby Nauer, spelled with a K. We have the evidence.
This
next
is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Who are we as a people? We must fix reason firmly in her seat and question with boldness. Who are we as a people? And sometimes those decisions are really hard and painful, and it's easier to look the other way. Because sometimes the wrong choice is cloaked as compassion and care. There is a baby, 11-month-old Charlie Gard. Please tweet your friends about it. We'll have all the information in the stories at glenbeck.com and The Blaze. But he has days to live. They're waiting for another court, their Supreme Court, to rule on whether or not the life support should be pulled from this baby. Rare disease, no quality of life, going to be in pain. The parents have the money, want to pull the child out of the hospital in London, bring him to America where there's a hospital. One hospital said we'll treat him for free. Another hospital said we'll treat him. They have $1.7 million that they've raised. We'll treat him. We have one of the best doctors in the world for this particular disease. Don't know how it's going to work out, but let's give it a try. England, the National Health Institute, says no. The child has to have its life support pulled and die with dignity. This is really interesting. Because mercy killings started by putting children to sleep in Germany. Told you yesterday about baby Nauer, a baby that was born without part of one leg, part of one arm, and was blind. And the father and mother just didn't know what to do. It'd be a burden on the family and a burden on society. Probably become one of those useless eaters. They wrote to Hitler. Hitler sent his doctors out. And they euthanized the boy, put him to sleep. Because he didn't have any quality of life. He didn't have a future. As soon as baby Naur, which was known as Case K up until 2003, nobody could trace everything back, but they have spent decades looking for who was the first victim of the Holocaust. In 2003, it was directly connected to baby Naur, which was a very public event, 1939. As soon as baby Naur was killed, Hitler came and decreed that we needed to have, quote, mercy killings of 300,000 mentally and physically handicapped people. The children were forcibly taken from their parents to be killed. They were first institutionalized in the hospital, and then something would go wrong. Most of the parents got a fake notice that something had happened while they were systematically killing all of these children, because even the Germans back then would have been horrified to know that their government was killing the handicapped or children who didn't have any quality of life. Even the Germans in 1939 would have known that was wrong. And so they kept it secret. And all of the doctors that signed the death certificates changed their names. No one wanted this to be known. 275,000 victims later, the Holocaust was moving in full gear. There were six hospitals that were devoted to processing cases. Processing meant that they would be killed. Poland, in the Czech Republic, children and adults were drugged, gassed, or starved to death. The UK is starving this child to death. The guy who is in charge of a lot of this at the Children's Hospital, the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, was Dr. Mengele, who went on to do some other things with children that we all know. This I had to take. I don't have the original. It's locked up in a safe off premises, so I don't have the original. I thought we did. This is part of the Mercury One collection. This is the last prescription written by Mengele at the Children's Hospital. It's significant because he is ordering for the hospital a large quantity of luminol. We now know in 2003 that luminol was the way they were killing all of the children. It would put them to sleep, and within 5 days they'd be dead. This is Mengele's actual prescription to help those children die with dignity. This is what's happening. Now, you want to die with dignity? We follow the course of a man in Los Angeles who is adopting those children who nobody wants to adopt because they're all dying. And they're in foster care. And he will only adopt children who are dying so they can die with dignity. He brings them into the family. How about this one? Elderly woman in China rescues 30 abandoned babies from the trash, gives them all a chance at life. She saved the lives of 30 abandoned babies since 1972. She's 88 years old now. Now, in China, we don't understand this. But remember yesterday, I was talking about the difference of being people from ancient Israel and being people of Rome. Christians of ancient Israel know that they serve God and it gives them humility. They know that God decides who wins, not man. Man does his best effort to serve God. Rome is all about man and winning and conquering. Rome, it was because of the Christians that this practice stopped. But in ancient Rome, they had garbage barges, and people would take their filth and throw it out into the river on these garbage barges. And the garbage barges at the time moved. I don't mean floated. I mean writhed. Because people would go to the garbage barge and throw their unwanted babies onto the garbage barge. And nobody cared. It was the Western idea of Jesus that saved those children. We were built on a different ethic. The guy who has a child like Charlie here in America, in fact, is the one who reached out overseas to the UK to Charlie's parents and said, there's a doctor you guys have to meet. But now the British government won't let them come to America for this treatment. His child was treated here in America. Same disease. His boy is now 6 years old. He says he's a strong and happy boy. The doctor said he only had 2 months to live. He's six now. He said, I feel very fortunate to be an American and not British. If I lived in the UK, my son would be dead today. And let me give you one other story about a woman who refused to give up her disabled son. She gave birth to her son in China. In China, the doctors told that his life was not worth saving because he had a birth complication and nearly suffocated. It left him with cerebral palsy. And the doctor said he doesn't have a life. He's going to be disabled. And he's going to have very low intelligence. Mom disagreed with the doctors. Dad agreed with the doctors. Kill him. He's going to be a burden on the family forever. You imagine saying that? Mom said no, got a divorce, got her son from the Chinese hospital. She spent her entire life working with him. In her spare time, she took him to rehabilitation sessions. She taught herself how to massage his stiff muscles. She'd play educational games with him. She insisted from the start that he would learn and he would overcome his disabilities. Well, she worked so hard, she insisted teaching him how to use chopsticks during mealtimes, even though he found it extraordinarily difficult because of his cerebral palsy. She said, I didn't want him to feel ashamed about his physical problems. I didn't want him to think that he had inferior abilities, which he did in many areas. But I was quite strict on him to work hard and to catch up where he had difficulties. He graduated with a degree in environmental science from Peking University in 2011. Oh, he's now working on his doctorate while attending Harvard Law School. But remember, doctor said he didn't have a life worth living. Somebody else, Stephen Hawking, only had 2 years to live. Look at the difference he made. FDR, polio, paralyzed from the waist down. Ralph Braun, guy you've not heard of, you should. He is a guy, was born with muscular dystrophy. He started his career in 1966 because he is the inventor of the wheelchair accessible van. How about Marley Matlin? Is her life... Stevie Wonder, was his life worth living? Did you know that Frida was in a wheelchair? The artist Frida was in a wheelchair. Helen Keller. My daughter. And the millions like her all around the world, who most people in the world will not know her name. She hasn't done anything famous, but she has changed my life. She has changed the life of her family. She has changed the life of others who know her. Who are you to judge who has a life worth living? What is it with this society that we think that it's compassionate to take away all consequences or all pain? Pain is a basic part of life. It teaches us the stove is hot. Don't put your hand on the hot stove. People who have a condition of they can't feel pain have to walk around almost as if they're in a bubble. The pain that parents feel with a differently abled child is extreme at times, but it is glorious most of the time. We have to decide who we are, because we're not in danger of losing just our country or our good doctors, or even the Western way of life. We are losing our humanity and rushing towards the garbage barges of Rome of days gone by. My Patriot Supply is our sponsor this half hour. You guys see the emergency session at the UN yesterday? Nikki Haley called North Korea their launch a clear and sharp military escalation. U.S. military action remains on the table. Boy, does our president need prayers this week while he's meeting with Russia and everybody else in the G20. This is a serious, serious situation. Emergency food is all about self-reliance. It takes your hope that we'll survive and turns it into confidence. I know my family's going to be fine. There is so much peace in that knowledge. Now they have their new survival food supply, which includes 102 adult servings of breakfast, lunches, and dinner for only $99. The world is changing so rapidly, and we are not out of the woods. Please, please, we are headed towards the darkest parts of the woods. Call 1-800-200-7163, 800-200-7163, or go to preparewithglenn.com. That's preparewithglenn.com.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
Ben Shapiro is in the house. He'll be joining us here in just a second.
An interesting thing about that Baby Nauer story is when the parents requested the baby to be euthanized, the Hitler regime went to the parents and said, it can be done. However, it's not you requesting it. It is I, the Fuhrer, because we will take that burden away from you. We don't want you to wake up in 10 years and think, did I do something wrong to my child? I will do it. I am the only one who can make that decision. And
so cloaked in compassion, taking mm-hmm. full control of everyone's medical choices
mm-hmm.
it was in one nice, compassionate move.
How it starts.
Fight for Charlie Gard. Hashtag Charlie Gard, know you in guard.
Glenn Beck.
Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
There will be a few real intellectual leaders that will gather Americans around the tent pole of right and wrong, good and evil, and the Constitution again. And one of those leaders happens to be in our studio now. His name is Ben Shapiro from The Daily Wire. Really, really smart, very, very brave. We're going to tackle, we're going to solve all of the world's problems in the next about 54 minutes. It's going to be a rocking hour. Here we go. Begins right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Ben Shapiro, good to have you on the program.
It's an honor, of course.
Good to have you here. I just want to run down just a few of the things that are going on in the world and just get your take on where we are, what we're headed towards. First of all, quickly, let's touch on the topic that we've been on all day. Charlie Gard, the little 11-month-old child whose parents have the money to take him to America to get treatment. The courts and the national health care system in Great Britain says no. He's got to die in a British hospital. Literally, mm-hmm. He's got to die in a British hospital. Slate magazine just said that the right is going to use this as a case for death panels and against socialized medicine. Where do you stand on this?
I mean, it seems like a pretty solid case against death panels and socialized medicine.
Sure,
so I don't
does.
See why we wouldn't possibly use
right.
that as a cudgel. I think that my wife is a doctor. She's in residency and she works in a hospital and she deals with terminal people all the time. And the doctors will say they'll lay out all the choices for people who are terminal, and they say maybe you'd prefer not to be poked and prodded every 5 hours, maybe you want to die at home. But this is all about the choice of the patient. And here, in Charlie Gard's case, obviously it's not about the choice of the patient, it's not about the choice of the parents. When a government and a society decide that quantity of life is less important than quality of life, you end up in a really dire situation, because the goal of the government at least should be to preserve quantity of life. It's your job to decide what sort of quality of life you want to enjoy, and we all have our different moral standards on that. But once the government decides that it gets to decide what quality of life is worth living, then
you're
you run into some serious...
So we were... I had my staff reach out to leaders of churches and faith over in England yesterday, mm-hmm. and got several responses. One of them was... from a pastor who said, look, the churches in the pulpits, they are not dealing with this. They're not talking about it at all. However, the Christians in England are talking about it. It's interesting that he hoists the white flag and says, the pulpits, including mine,
yeah.
have surrendered on this, but the people are talking about it. So there's a huge disconnect there. But he said... please tell Glenn that this is not a case of the government just taking away the rights of a child or rights of parents. It is more so that the government has paid for this child's health care. And he said, now that they have the money to take him to America, I see no reason why he can't go to America. However, there isn't enough money to work on cases like that here in England. So he was making the case that if you don't have money, that it would be right and righteous to say, let him die. If you are in a socialized healthcare system and you don't have the money, is it wrong? What do you do?
Well, I mean, this is why socialized healthcare systems don't work. I mean, eventually
right.
somebody's making the final call. Even, I mean, it's not like these parents were born into wealth. I mean, they raised this money from a bunch of charitable people
right.
so that they could take their kid out and try and save
right.
the kid. As far as the issue with the pulpits, I mean, this is something that happens in the United States also. I think one of the great tragedies of the latter half of the 20th century is that pulpit figures across the board in Judaism, in Christianity, have fled from crucial moral battles that are happening in the now in order to keep on the good side of government because they're afraid that the government is going to come against them. And so they've run from these moral battles, and you see it all the time, and it's really devastating. It's sucked the marrow from the bones of religion.
So then let's go to another moral question. Less importance. The CNN battle with the WWF video. Okay. I'm having a really hard time with this because I don't see a good guy on either side.
Mm-hmm.
I see the president doing something that if Barack Obama would have had, if he just would have retweeted, not saying that Donald Trump did anything but retweeted, If Barack Obama would have retweeted something that had an old clip of him beating the snot out of somebody and it superimposed a tea bag over the guy's head, we would have gone ape crazy. We would have become animals and gone nuts.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
For sure.
Okay. So why don't we see now that we would have reacted the same way that the left is reacting to this, and forget about how others are acting, worry about how we're acting.
Because we don't care how we're acting anymore. I mean, all we care about is the reactionary nature of politics right now. It's why President Trump has like a 90% approval rating among Republicans and a 10% approval rating among Democrats. And the same thing by the end of the Obama term was basically true. We're so polarized that we're using the polarization as an excuse for bad behavior. And listen, I've spent my entire adult life fighting the left. And I was not expecting moral leadership from the left. I've never expected moral leadership from the left because they don't believe in the same values that I believe in. But I did expect moral leadership from the right. And I don't really see how moral leadership is advanced by tweeting out, you know, GIFs of WWE wrestling CNN logos. I mean, this was once an office occupied by George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. It's a little bit clowntastic to watch the president tweet this stuff.
So have we just surrendered to Clowntasm.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Republican Party has broken down into, and the conservative movement has broken down into maybe three groups. Group number one are people who say this is ridiculous and silly, and there's no way he should be doing this. And group two is this is ridiculous and silly, but at least we got Gorsuch. And then group three are the people, and this is the growing group, this is the one that I actually worried the most about, is people who actively celebrate this, where this is a feature, not a bug. It's not, well, you're going to get the stupid tweet from time to time, but at least you get Scott Pruitt over at EPA paring back the regulations. It's the people who say, I don't really care what Scott Pruitt is doing so much. Like, I don't pay attention to that. And Gorsuch, yay. But what I'm really interested in, what really gets you jazzed up is the tweets about Mika Brzezinski's bloody facelift or Trump tackling a CNN logo. Like, that's really what gets me going.
Well, it's amazing because we used to say, when I was at Fox, watch the other hand.
Mm-hmm.
And the other hand, well, A, I don't think they're coordinated. I think both hands are just flailing, doing whatever they want. But you could make the case that they're very strategic because we're not talking about a healthcare reform that is absolutely awful. It's not any better.
I'm always hesitant to credit strategy to President Trump when sheer unbridled id would do it. I think that this wasn't, he thought, you know what, I really need a distraction from my health reform bill, so I'm going to tweet out a dumb GIF.
Yeah.
I think it was, somebody forwarded me a dumb GIF, ha ha ha, wouldn't it be hilarious if I put it up on my Twitter feed? And it really was that amount of consideration.
Right.
So in order for it to be a diversion usually requires something for you to divert attention from. I don't think he's diverting attention necessarily from the healthcare bill, because that's a giant, right now it's a cluster.
What kills me is that there are a lot of people that are willing, very smart people that are willing to say, and help me understand it, Ben,
mm-hmm.
that are willing to say, this is okay. The healthcare mm-hmm. bill. Let's just say everything else is sane, but this is that the people I trust now are not Mike Lee. They are, what's his face? Turtle face from Kentucky.
McConnell.
McConnell. Okay. They're trusting McConnell over people like Mike Lee.
Yeah.
Help me figure that out.
So, not to break too many groups down to other groups. But I think there are two groups of people here. One is the people who just want to see a win for Trump. And that means something has to pass. And since we're not going to pass simple repeal, because Trump basically foreclosed that. I mean, he forbade that during the campaign. He made a bunch of promises that are not in coordination with simple repeal. And he said, we're not going to let anybody go without health care. The government's going to make sure that everybody is covered. I mean, he said this stuff in the campaign.
Yeah.
So it's kind of difficult to say then now we're going to repeal and we're going to cut back Medicaid. So there's group number one that just wants to see Trump get a win. And then there's group number two who say, OK, now we're going to be honest. We were lying for 7 years. The Republicans were lying for 7 years when they said they were going to repeal this thing. Now we got to be honest. We're not repealing it. But the best that we can do is a Medicaid restructuring and a tax cut. And that's the best that we're going to do here. And we'll call it Obamacare repeal so that all the idiots have all the rubes will believe it.
Is there a group, a growing group of conservatives that believe in socialized everything?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a growing group of conservatives who at least don't care, who are apathetic, who are more interested, again, in the fight against what they perceive to be the left than they are in the fight against leftist policy. So there's a mistake that's been made, which is you identify the entirety of leftism as residing in the halls of CNN or the New York Times or at the universities. But when leftism actually starts to infect your party, then it can't be infecting your party because, hey, we're Republicans. We're conservatives. We don't believe in the. Yeah. We're not leftists. I mean, come on. We hate those guys. And it doesn't matter. This is why, you know, Steve Bannon, the White House chief strategist, he was out there floating trial balloons about raising taxes on the rich. And there are a bunch of people going, well, yeah, why not do that? I'm like, well, where were you? What? I've been here for a while. This is a new one. But people saying, well, I mean, if that's good policy and if that'll help us win Democratic voters and all the rest of it, then why not do it? Again, I think that what people, the stuff that you and I were looking at during the campaign, we were saying this is really like some of the activity that Trump was pushing, or things like Gianforte, the candidate in Montana, body slamming a reporter, things where you and I were going, this is crazy. Like, how is this happening? There are a lot of people who are seeing that not as in spite of that, we're happy because we're getting some good policy. The policy doesn't actually matter. All that matters is we have for so long hated losing to the left that people literally body slamming reporters or just going out there and labeling everything fake news or wrestling gifts or all this stuff is actually, that's what we wanted. We elected that, right? What we wanted was the Twitter. Okay, right. The Twitter is not an obstacle to getting what we want. The Twitter is what we want. The policy is the obstacle to getting what we want because we might not get more Twitter if he doesn't get policy passed that allows him to get reelection. And I think we have to be honest with ourselves about whether we're more jazzed up about the wrestling gif or whether we're more jazzed up about Gorsuch. Because I think that
we're more jazzed up about the wrestling.
I think that's right. And I think Trump thinks that's right, too, which is why he keeps doing it. Right. He gets more applause doing that than he does with conservative policy.
Back with Ben Shapiro here in a second. While we are celebrating our country's independence this week, keep in mind all of those who fought to defend our freedoms. But what happens when the bad guys just aren't overseas? They're not just terrorists overseas, but in your own hometown. This is something that Germany is really ratcheting up for tomorrow for the G20 summit. They think that thing could just be a giant sinkhole of radicalism and violence tomorrow. It's a matter of time before it comes here because we're really not doing the things that we need to do. The USCCA knows that in today's unpredictable world, self-defense is much more of a necessity than ever before. They are the first and largest organization to be solely dedicated to the protection of responsible gun owners before, during, and after a self-defense incident. You have no idea. We all prepare to pull the trigger and mentally prepare for that moment and know the difference between now and not now and all of that stuff. We don't think about what happens after we pull the trigger. Your life is changed for at least 3 years. And that's just even if you pull the trigger and you don't even hit anybody. You need somebody now protecting you, the protector. That's exactly what the USCCA does. Find out all about it at protectanddefend.com. Also, get registered for their Great American Giveaway. Five lucky winners going to win $1,776 for guns and ammo. Buy the gun of your dream. Do it this week. Might as well be you. Five people are going to be selected. All you have to do is just go and register at protectanddefend.com. That's protectanddefend.com. Go there now.
Today at 5 p.m. Eastern on the Blaze TV.
Glenn is taking your calls live for a full hour. Call 888-727-BECK and ask Glenn anything.
Today at 5 p.m. Eastern on the Blaze TV.
We have one. The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Sign up for the newsletter and get all the info you need to know at glennbeck.com.
Good friend of the program, good friend, and also a good friend to the Constitution, deeply rooted in logical thought, which is rare. Ben Shapiro from The Daily Wire is here with us.
And a lot smarter than us, so let me ask a question. the CNN thing, their reaction to the wrestling situation, mm-hmm. which was, you know, them saying, well, we won't release a name, but, you know, if you act badly, we might.
Yeah.
I don't even understand that.
It was a weird way of phrasing it, and I'm not defending CNN in the way they handled it. It was very clunky at best. I was a little surprised on the sort of uniform reaction on the right, though, at least the passionate response from the right, saying, sort of giving this real reverence to an online pseudonym, like as if this really means that you're anonymous. I mean, like, you know, you could try to be anonymous, but that does not guarantee your anonymity. And beyond that, the idea that you can kind of go... You know, who are you mad at? You're mad at CNN here, who's essentially, let's say, in the school situation, the principal punishing your kid for doing something wrong, right? They're punishing your kid for being something wrong. I always see the right as the people who are mad at their kid, not at the school.
Right.
The left is the one that goes and whines about the school. Hey, why did you get my kid in trouble? You're causing real detriment.
Mm-hmm.
Where the right is supposed to be the one saying, wait a minute, moron a kid. Don't post anti-Semitic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Don't post stuff online you want to associate with yourself. What am I missing there?
Well, I mean, I think I don't think you're missing anything with the basic calculus as far as the right is supposed to be chiding people when they do this sort of stuff. Although during the last election cycle, as the number one recipient of anti-Semitic tweets in the journalistic community,
40%?
According to the ADL, 40% of all anti-Semitic tweets directed at journalists came to me personally during
congratulations.
The last election.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's great. I have a trophy on my desk. Most hated Jew in America, which is a real accomplishment. Wow. Yeah, it's great. I think that this story is a little bit more than that for a couple of reasons. One is that the attempt to link Trump with the guy who created the meme and then to link him with all the other stuff that this guy had ever created was obviously a stretch.
And unfair.
Unfair to Trump.
Totally unfair.
And it's in obviously a hit job on Trump. So that was CNN going over its skis on that. Okay, so assume that and say, okay, fine. Well, they disagree. They think that if that Trump associating with the Reddit crowd, he gets whoever he's linked to, we're now going to search for all their ancillary material and link him to that, which, again, I have a problem with. That's only mistake number one. Mistake number two is that apparently they got the wrong guy. So apparently they actually they didn't even get the right guy. And then mistake number three is that they apparently called him. And before he returned their call, he said, OK, CNN's on my tail. I'm going to apologize and pull all this stuff down before I call them back. He does that. He calls them back. And then they run that story where they say, and we'll keep him anonymous if he obeys our orders. Okay, that's no longer journalism. That's now activism. So if you're an activist group, that's okay, right? I mean, it's still
what do you think of the
moral
idea that Stu floated yesterday that's really the BuzzFeed crew that kind of came in that was pushing back against CNN because they are more activist.
Yeah.
I mean, me wrong. I worked at CNN. They are activists as well. But not like the BuzzFeed people.
I mean, I do think that the media have become just generally more activist since Trump was elected. I mean, they now see it as their... I wrote a column for National Review where I said that the dichotomy right now in the American discourse is that the left sees themselves and the media see themselves as these, you know, battered hat, trench coat wearing guys who are snooping on the streets in every nook and cranny for all the corruption over at Trumpany Hall.
Yeah.
And then the right sees Trump as a sort of playboy billionaire Bruce Wayne type who, you know, is an idiot during the day, but then at night he dons the bat cape and goes out and brings justice to Mika Brzezinski's face.
Right.
You know, so I'm not sure that it's a bridge that can never be a gap that can never be bridged. But, you know, as far as CNN's behavior on this, I think I reacted very strongly to this because the CNN is not the gatekeeper of telling people what they can do or we're going to release X.
Yes.
It's either newsworthy and release it or it's not newsworthy and let it go. You don't get to just hold things over
people's
heads.
Here's the thing I don't understand. I mean, today I saw this for the first time. This apparently what was on that guy's
feed or whatever.
Feed.
Yeah.
This comes from a pro-Hitler group. And you're not on this, but this is all the Jews.
I don't know
Jews.
If they missed me. I mean,
yeah, I know. This is all the Jews that work at CNN.
I mean, guys, we're a keeper. Come on.
Okay. So
there are Jews that work at CNN.
Yes.
I know, it's amazing.
And so this is amazing because it has all their faces with a Star of David next to it. I mean, it's so clearly Hitler anti-Semitic kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
By saying, hey, we're not going to release this stuff, they actually, I don't think, did go as far as they could have to tie Trump to this kind of stuff. If they would have spent 2 days showing this stuff and saying, this is the kind of stuff that he was doing, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Then it would have been worse. I don't understand their strategy. I'll get to that in just a second.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program, and to Ben Shapiro, who is from the Daily Wire and a really bright guy who is not afraid. We have very different approaches, the two of us, but I think we believe much of the same stuff.
Right, you're a nice person. I'm not. So that, that definitely.
No, it's just I want to talk to you a little bit about that too before we go, because that's not it. I mean, I don't think you're a bomb thrower by any stretch of the imagination. We were talking about this earlier today. You're very logical, and you don't mind confrontation, but
right.
You're not a bomb thrower. There's a difference between a bomb thrower and a, you know, you're not quite Ravi Zacharias. I don't know if you know who he is.
Yeah.
But you're in that on that road.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. I mean, yeah, I like to think that I'm more interested in saying things that I think are true than I am in offending people. And if the things that I think are true offend people, then so
there's
be it.
There's a totally different. I mean, some people go out to make headlines and to offend. I don't think I've never seen you do that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's something that I do take some pride in.
Yeah.
And it's one of the reasons why it's so funny. I'll speak on these college campuses and there'll be these major protests and quasi-riots and all this. And then when people who are on the left actually come to the lecture, they'll say they don't understand what that was all about.
Yeah, I know. I know. Okay, so let's go back to where we were before the break. You were about to answer something.
That's the CNN thing.
CNN, yes. Okay, so what is CNN's strategy on the way they dealt with all of this?
I think that the entire media right now are so, as I say, I think we're in a reactionary period, which is really dangerous, because whatever happens out of a reactionary period, it's rarely good. But the media are so reactionary that they think every story is a kill shot. And so they're interested in just getting the story out fast.
Don't they know there's no kill shot on this one?
Yeah, exactly.
It's not going to happen.
But they think everything is, right? I mean, you have Democrats who are saying, based on his tweets last week with MSNBC, he should be impeached. It's like, really, that's your ground?
Yeah.
Like, that was it? Like, have you not seen his Twitter
feed? Is that a high crime or a misdemeanor? Which one is that?
It's the Twitter clause of the Constitution.
Yeah.
I mean, they've put a lot of other clauses in there. There's no reason to think they can't put that one in there, too. But they really are in order for them to maintain ratings, or also because they actually believe this, they are living in this mythical world where if they break the right story, then Trump will just collapse and he won't be president anymore and the entire reality will change. And this is why CNN was pumping the Trump-Russia collusion stuff, not just saying that, you know, there are people who Trump was associated with who have Russian connections, which is true, but saying there was active collusion and trying to blow this up into some big scandal with no evidence.
There's no evidence of that.
None. And they were doing this for a year, and particularly post-election they were doing it because their viewers are invested in the idea that if they want to be watching CNN at directly the moment when Trump goes down.
Yeah, but don't they?
Yeah, that's
true. But don't they understand that we kind of already paved that ground and it gave birth to the birthers?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 4 years into it, Donald Trump is doing the whole birth certificate thing, which only hardens his supporters. That's all that does. And so by CNN making everything into an impeachment, grounds of impeachment and a constitutional crisis, they're only hardening both sides.
They don't care. I mean, why would they care? And I think that on the right, why would people on the right care? I mean, you used to be able to say two things. Number one, it's bad for the American body politic to have these hardening of positions. And number two, it's not going to bring you victory. But clearly, that's not true, right? I mean, clearly, we on the right keep saying, when are the Democrats going to propose something? When are they going to bring their solutions? They don't need to, okay? Let's not pretend here. The Republicans brought no solutions for 8 years while Obama was president, and they yelled at him. And then the guy who said that he was born in Kenya is the president of the United States. So it's very difficult to make the argument that what we really need is a great unifier in order to win elections when I can't say that we were exactly the party of unification. Now, that doesn't say there was something to unify with. The left wasn't providing a lot for us to unify over while President Obama was president, was providing his own form of polarization and racial extremism in terms of polarizing various racial groups for political gain. But right now there's not a lot of incentive on any side for a rhetoric of unity or for a rhetoric of reason.
A rhetoric of reason and unity, and I don't like his policies at all, was Mitt Romney.
Yes.
And he was right down the traditional middle and everything else. Mm-hmm. He was much more conservative than this president mm-hmm. is in many ways. And yet we didn't unify around that. We unify against somebody who's going to punch back.
Now that's the whole thing. I think that this is a rage moment. And one of the things that's happening for politicians and the media is there's a lot of money and a lot of political gain to be made in humoring people's anger. You know, I'm as a parent, one of the things, you know, I have two kids who are under the age of four, and which means you deal with tantrums a lot. And one of the things that you do with the kid who's having a tantrum is you have to say, you know, why are you having the tantrum? Is the anger justified? Right. And usually the anger is not. It's a 3.5-year-old. Right. I mean, why the anger usually isn't. When people who are adults are angry, we no longer even bother asking them, is your anger justified? Are you mad for a good reason or are you just mad? And then if they're mad, we say, OK, well, we can grab that. We can use that. We can channel that anger into something politically useful, you know, electing me or raising money for this cause. And so if there's nothing to be angry at, or if there's less to be angry at than you think, then how are you going to take advantage of that? And I think that that's what you see happening on both sides of the aisle. So on the left, they're saying this is the worst president who ever was. He's Hitlerian. It's nothing's happening, guys. Like nothing. Zero things have happened, right?
Nothing.
I mean, Judge Gorsuch replaced Justice Scalia.
Right.
Okay, nothing happened. Nothing's happening, right?
Right.
And there's been zero major pieces of legislation passed and signed by this president. There have been a bunch of repeals of small laws under Obama, but like, come on, this has been a transformational presidency. Not in any way has this been transformational, but the left is treating it like you have a reason to be angry. There's a reason you're mad. Not really. And on the right, you have people like President Trump did this during the campaign to great effect, where he was going into these small towns that were shutting down because the industries had left and saying, well, the reason that you have a right to be angry, and not a right to be angry at the overregulation, which is legit, but you have a right to be angry because the Chinese and the Mexicans are stealing your job. And if we would just win again, if we didn't have all these idiots and we would just win again, then we would be able to bring everything back. All these factories would come flowing back in. And of course, none of that is true. And so what you have right now is the media trying for a buck to promote anger, and you have the politicians for a vote to try and promote anger. And never at any point does anybody, it makes a pathological country. Right? Jonathan Haidt, social psychologist over at NYU, he talks about how when it comes to psychology, the single best method that's been devised for psychologists is cognitive behavioral therapy, where they try to take somebody who's having a chain of bad thoughts that's leading to depression, and then they try to say, okay, well, why is it that is it possible you're exaggerating the situation? Is it possible you're reading somebody wrong? You break the chain of bad thoughts by saying, maybe your feelings are not justified. Maybe you should reexamine your own feelings and get control over your own feelings, and then you can control yourself as a human being. Politics is the opposite of that now. It's to take that rage and exacerbate it and magnify it and make it bigger and broader and louder.
So, Ben, that brings me right to you and me. And I wouldn't put us in different categories. You just approach it differently. You are approaching it with reason. But you don't mind the battle.
I kind of want to see Ben Shapiro as a dad with a logical argument to the 3.5-year-old.
Like, thankfully, she's a pretty logical 3.5-year-old. Yeah, she's still 3.5. But
actually, the macaroni and cheese is the correct temperature, and you'll eat it right now.
Are you seeing, and are you even looking for those people, not on the left, but the reasonable people? I think there's... I don't even know what the number is. On a bad day, I think it's 30%. On a good day, I think it's maybe 70% of Americans who, if were presented with a group of adults that could all get along, even though they disagree, and were saying, you know what, just come over and watch that stuff burn down over here. We're just going to start moving and getting some things done. Kind of the Republican Party in the 1850s that really was mainly made up of Democrats at the time that said, you're not serious. And the Whigs that joined them and said, my side's not serious either. Mm-hmm. And we actually want to solve this slavery thing. Do you see those reasonable people out there?
I do, actually. I think it's a growing number of people who are disillusioned with the WWE of it all. And are sick of, and they see that it's kind of fake, that really it's a lot of people who are making money and
you see it on the left as well?
I think, yeah. I mean, I think that when I get a lot of letters from college kids, because I speak a lot to college kids, and they watch my videos, and I get a lot of letters from college kids who say I was on the left and I was, you know, motivated to believe that people on the right were nasty and mean and cruel, and then I watch some of your stuff, and now it's opened my mind, and I'm doing some reading of my own, and I'd like to kind of examine ideas differently. And I think that there are those people who are getting over this. I think that what's the future for conservatism is not going to be complete Reagan conservatism. It's going to be almost a conservative libertarian merger.
Yes.
It's going to be a leave me alone
yes.
thing, because we're so sick of everybody in our business. In fact, I think that that's actually the strongest pitch that conservatives can make right now to people on the left, is not come on over here and join us on the Trump train.
It's, I agree.
You hate Trump? Okay, well, I hated Obama. I thought he was terrible. Well, I have a solution for all of this, which is how about we just take the power away from everyone in Washington, D.C., and then you don't have to care who's the president. Yeah. He's just some guy who lives in a house
and
somewhere.
And we're not going to change your life. You live what you like. Don't change how I live my life. Let's just live side by side. I think there is a real case to be made. I think that's what's going to come out of this. I was just in Hollywood, of all places, all last week. And I met with group after group after group. Some of them were hardened, at least one in each group of the probably 10 meetings that I had. At least one was hardened against me when I first mm-hmm. walked in. And it became a joke of the team that was going with me, because they were like, how long before they turn? How long before they turn? Turned every single one of them because of Jonathan Haidt actually used his method of talking their language, speaking reason, being humble, friendly, likable. Laugh at yourself, laugh at the other side, immediately turn. I had huge liberals come to me and say, I am more afraid of the left than I am of your side now because of what's happening on college campuses. This is the kind of round people up, and it's usually Jews. You know, they were the liberal Jews that were saying these kinds of things to me.
I think that the political situation right now, it's sort of a game of ping pong. And eventually the people are just going to get tired of bouncing between the two polar extremes, between the Bernie Sanders left and the Black Lives Matter left and the, you know, hardcore.
Do you think that there's enough Democrats that are still out there that say, I don't want Bernie Sanders? Because the Democrats are moving towards that kind of a.
I think Bernie Sanders is an interesting case, because Sanders is smart enough to actually not play the intersectional game as much as he plays the socialist game. So he's actually a more unifying figure for Americans than Kamala Harris, for example.
Yes.
And so Sanders is actually the great danger from the Democrats is coming. I agree with the hard left of the Democratic Party, who's Bernie Sandersite, that the actual future of the Democratic Party and their victory is going to lie with people like Bernie Sanders and not with this. Separate people by their race and then run on the typical Democratic platform.
Yes.
I mean, I think that if Sanders had actually been the nominee, I think there's a much more significant chance that he is president than Hillary.
I think
that he probably wins Michigan pretty easily.
I agree.
So it's, you know, that's the danger.
I agree.
That's not just because of his ideas. It's because he has steadfastly refused to engage in some of the
play the game.
Exactly.
He's not playing the game.
That's right.
Yep.
Let me do one more without no politics at all here. I'm fascinated by something that you've done recently, which is I just took my kid to hit our first baseball game.
Mm-hmm.
He's five. I'm indoctrinating him to be a Toronto Blue Jays fan for absolutely no explainable reason. but you actually just wrote a book about your experience going through the 2005 White Sox championship. How did that come about? I think that's a fascinating thing.
Yeah, so my dad and I are huge White Sox fans. So I picked up all my dad's sports allegiances. Mm-hmm. So he's from Chicago. My mom's from Chicago. I was born in L.A., so that means I've never really been to a home game. I've just been to visiting games. And so we're huge White Sox fans. And in 2005, I was at Harvard Law. And it was kind of a rough year, and he was having a rough year. And so we just decided we were going to watch every White Sox game. So between the two of us, we watched every White Sox game that season, and they ended up winning the World Series. And so we wrote this book where half the book is us writing notes to each other. How are you doing? And we just compiled all of that into a book. So we took notes on the games and then.
See, I wrote you about that. And you said it's a sports book. So really, no big deal. That's not a sports book. That's a dad and that's a father and son book.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot of fun. It is. If you're a baseball fan, you'll get a lot more out of it because there is a lot of baseball. I mean, we do love baseball, so there's a lot of baseball in there. But yeah, it's my dad telling stories about his dad and me and my dad interrelating. And so that's
what's the name of the book?
It's called Say It So.
OK. Ben Shapiro, he'll be on with us. I think we're doing a Facebook thing, and we're so thrilled to have you. And really, keep up the good work.
Well, as I say, it's an honor and a pleasure to be with you always.
Thank you. Our sponsor this half hour is Goldline. No historic precedent for a military attack aimed at destroying a country's nuclear arsenal. None. Quote, it would probably be the worst kind of fighting in most people's lifetime, end quote. That's only Jim Mattis saying that about North Korea.
Did he say arsenal or did he say arsenal? Just curious as to what Mattis's phrasing was of that particular incident.
I don't know how he got into radio. They keep paying me. As soon as they stop paying me, I'll get out gladly. Okay. I mean, I realize how bad I am, so you don't have to point it out. You think the audience doesn't know this?
I just want to make sure they caught
anyway,
it.
Anyway, you need an exclusive report from President Reagan's budget director, David Stockman. He has identified five threats to the economy and financial markets. We are in really, really dangerous territory. I mean, there's so many ways for the world just to collapse financially, but don't worry. I would check out Goldline's important information right now. It's a report exclusive from Goldline. It's absolutely free. 866-465-3546. That's 866-GOLDLINE. They are extending also their price protection program. Right now, for $2,500, you'll get 3 months of price protection. Means if it drops in 3 months, they make it up in gold. Nobody does this. You go up to $25,000, they guarantee it up to a year. You can't lose money. No investment does this. Call Goldline now. Read their risk information. Ask for that free report. 866-GOLDLINE. 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Tonight at 5 o'clock, live show with you on The Blaze. Taking your calls for a full hour. Whatever is on your mind, and I've got a few things on mine, I want to hear from you. Call a few minutes before the show so they can get you lined up so we can use the entire hour taking your phone calls. The number is 888-727-BECK. That will happen at 5 p.m. Eastern live today. So call about 4:45 Eastern time and get on the program, and we will see you at 5 o'clock only on The Blaze TV.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.